I was raced off of Route 3, out past where the blacktop ends. We'd walk to church on Sunday morning.
Hour number two kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. As always, drink White Claw Hard Seltzer. We'll have some White Claw Hard Seltzer for you out at the Fan Run Open. We are 8 days away. Sign up. Support local charities. Hang out with us. Play some golf. You're going to be watching the Masters all weekend. You'll be like, oh, I want to swing the golf club. Well, come swing it with us. I got the trophy ordered. Engravements getting made. Excited for it. We're giving away two free teams to members of our 37 Club. Our 37 Club is an exclusive community, exclusive content, exclusive access to events, and you also just support your favorite sports radio station. You can buy your tickets, reserve your team, or as an individual to the 37 or to the Fan Run Open by going to fanrunradio.com/shop, or you can enter for one of the two free teams at fanrunradio.com/the37club. There's multiple ways to get in. Maybe you don't want to pay, you know, the entry fee for a full team. Well, you might get to play for free if you sign up and become a member of the 37 Club. All right, Sam, hour two. We always kick it off with about last night. What happened yesterday?
Thank you. In the NFL yesterday, you got some news of a infamous, famous player, O.J. Simpson, passed away yesterday of cancer at 76 years old. A guy that doesn't need a whole lot of introduction, I would say. Kind of came as a shock. I broke it to the station yesterday when we were sitting here after the show. I was talking to Houston and Bob as we were trying to get the Masters up on the TV, and I was shocked when I saw the O.J. Simpson kind of news come across the screen. So that happened yesterday.
O.J. Simpson, of course, not known really for his playing career for a lot of people listening right now, but did have, you know, one of, if not the greatest season ever as a running back, which is what propelled him to being so famous, to being such a crossover star, maybe the most successful, you know, football player turned actor. He was a big-time celebrity. Bob, I made the claim he is maybe one of the 10 most famous people of my lifetime in America. You know, removing, like, global stars. You know, I didn't bring in too many, like, soccer players and all that. But, like, in America, is O.J. one of the 10 most famous people since 1990?
Yeah, I would say so. You can buy, yeah, for all the wrong reasons, but yes, I would say so. You know, Sam said infamous. It's true. I remember that 2,000-yard season. I mean, he was electrifying as a player. You try to think back to all those things, but there's obviously, boy, we've talked this week about, whether it's college basketball or other sports, we've talked about polarizing characters. This is about as polarizing as it gets. But to answer your question, yes, I would say he's probably one of the 10 most famous.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's polarizing anymore. No one really cares about the playing career. I mean, everyone just kind of had a negative. I mean, he became reviled. I mean, he was
the most hated
celebrity. I don't even know if it's polarizing for most people. If you were around, you know, during the playing career or remember, like, the fame, sure, of course, I get that.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at, too, is, I mean, there's talk, you know, writers saying, should he be removed from the Hall of Fame now that he's left the earth and given all the other things? I mean, it's creating all those types of conversations.
People are trying to take him out of the Hall of Fame now? Like,
yeah.
What's the point now? Like, if you're going to do it when you could shame him. There's no point in doing it now. Like, they rode with that for so long. The Heisman Trophy Twitter account sent him a farewell yesterday. Like, I didn't see that type of discussion. But for me, OJ's celebrity is just so crazy because it intertwines with three of the biggest things since 1990. Like, it's bookended. You know, obviously, it gets started with the NFL. Like, he'll always be kind of thought of in the NFL landscape because of how good he was as a running back. But, like, NFL, one of the most popular entities, powerful entities in America, if not the number one, in entertainment. the race riots of LA. Like, I think the race riots directly impact his trial and being acquitted, and the way that they were able to kind of use race to help him be acquitted. Like, he's directly impacted by the race riots, and then the Kardashians on the back end, like, and the Kardashians, three of the most, like,
we don't have the Kardashians without them.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, I can't say for certain. No, I mean, we might not have Khloe without him.
Sure.
Since people think that he's her dad, we might not have Khloe. But, you know, I don't remember when Kim got famous, if it was all like, oh my God, it's Robert Kardashian's daughter doing this sex tape. I don't remember what it was. I mean, I know that's obviously a part of the lore. She was somewhat fringe famous for hanging out with like Paris Hilton back in the day, and like running around with that crew and kind of being the third ugly friend that hung out with them. So like, maybe they still would have been famous. I don't know what the OJ impact has with them, but he's at least a part of their story. So yeah, like the NFL, the race riots in LA, and the Kardashians are three of the most impactful things in pop culture the last 30 something years. OJ. Real life Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Except murderer too. Like, you know, Forrest didn't kill anybody, so got to be fair to Forrest Gump. He might have killed somebody in the war, but that's different. They didn't really show that in the movie. Maybe he was just protecting people and
for his country.
Yeah, he was just carrying people out. And, you know, then again, we don't get into the ethics of war and whether or not, you know, I think you're allowed to kill in war, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't make that decision. Yeah. But we don't know. We didn't see Forrest kill anybody.
Right.
Did you see Kyle Brandt's post?
I did not.
On social media. It was a video, and when you go to Axe, it prefaces it. He goes, my thoughts on O.J. Simpson's legacy. So you're expecting to hear something, and it opens up, and he just says, murderer, and then that's it.
Social media was on fire.
Yeah, 2 seconds.
Yeah, that's one of the events that, you know, when people are like, what event do you wish social media was around for? Like, can you imagine just that whole year of the Bronco chase, the jokes that would have been made during the Bronco chase, which would have been – people have been too soon, you know, two people are dead, you can't make these jokes, but the internet doesn't care. And then, of course, the trial. It would have gotten really ugly probably leading up to the trial. Do you remember, Bob? I imagine it stands out. You know where you were when you heard the news of the Bronco or of the murder, and then like he comes back a couple days later, and then there's the Bronco chase, and then even the trial, like when the verdict was read.
I know exactly where I was. I was actually, I was thinking about that. I was in New York, and we were just launching the Howard Stern TV show, his radio show going to TV. So I was basically living in New York, and I was in the hotel room watching, I think it might have been a Mets game or something, and that's when they cut in. And
The chase or the verdict?
The chase.
Okay.
The chase. No, not the verdict. No, I had moved to Knoxville by the time of the verdict.
That would have been during the Knicks finals game, right? That's what
actually that's what it was. Yeah. It wasn't the Mets. It was it was the NBA's. And so
Knicks Rockets. Because I remember that as a kid. Like I was just happy. You know, we only had the basic cable channels, but I'm watching NBC. I'm like, oh, I'm getting to watch some basketball finally. And then boom, news story and chase. I'm like, no, I'm gonna watch the basketball game. What? You know, I'm 4 or 5 years old trying to figure that out. And
I remember one of the guys who was one of the regulars on Stern Show, Captain Jenks, actually called in and got to Peter Jennings and, you know, trolled him, as we would call it today, doing a Baba Booey shout out while they were showing the Bronco chase. But yeah, I remember it vividly. It was just so surreal.
What about the verdict? 150 million people watched the verdict. Like, I mean, OJ was the, you know, the creation of the scandal news coverage, like, and making that mainstream and kind of making, you know, basically what cable news, what it is today. I mean, just in terms of the coverage.
Cable news and where I used to work, E! Entertainment Television ran the trial, like, all day.
Yeah.
It helped elevate them, too, and it wasn't even really in their space. I mean, it was about celebrity, but... but yeah, it was more of a news event. But yes, I do remember. Again, I'd moved to Knoxville by that time. I already knew I was kind of coming to the Knoxville area when I was wrapping up Stern, when the Bronco chase happened and everything else. So yeah, I'd already made the move. So yeah, I remember all that.
150 million people watched it, bigger than the Super Bowl. Wild.
Wild.
Forrest Gump.
The best tweet I saw was just the picture of the Bronco chase, and they were like, they have the opportunity to make this the greatest funeral procession of all time.
You think I was the first person ever to compare OJ to Forrest Gump? You think somebody else has done that?
I'll let you say that you were, yeah.
You know, I don't need to. I don't need it for like my ego or anything. No, you don't need to let me say it. I was just wondering. I can't decide if it's too far out there or if it's actually.
I kind of like
it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'll let you have it because I kind of like it.
Okay.
Forrest
Gump 2 would have featured OJ and Princess Diana. They say, if you Google it.
What?
The movie they were making a second one. They canceled it during 9/11. Like it was 9/11 basically got Forrest Gump 2 shelved and they never just revisited. But I guess they would have done the next news stories that happened in the 90s and yeah.
What could have been. Next year, some more details have come out on the Shohei Ohtani, Ippei Mizuhara interpreters, gambling stuff, I guess, here. Accused of stealing more than $16 million from Ohtani to pay off gambling debts, according to an affidavit that was filed by federal authorities. This just is really getting confusing here with all this stuff that's come out.
Do people still think Shohei was doing the gambling? Now that we know that, like, we actually got...
I do.
The FBI getting these and the phone calls he's making to the bank posing as Shohei, do we...
These texts are fabricated.
Okay.
They look fake to me.
Okay.
What translator is talking to a bookie being like, on my mom, I'm going to be able to pay this one back? I think they're both guilty. I guess that's what I'm saying. I think Shohei knew about it, and I think he was participating in it to some extent, but this dude was just really guilty.
Why does this translator want me to hit a home run so bad today?
Yeah.
Why is he not celebrating that I'm pitching so well? He's betting against him.
The stuff is just – it's really weird that's come out. I mean, they said he's totaled approximately 19,000 bets. It's totaled, hundreds of millions of dollars. They're saying that he's lost roughly $40 million in this whole thing. And that, this translator was the one that set up Ohtani's bank account, basically. He didn't allow, his agent or his financial advisors to have access to his account. So, this guy is him and Shohei are the only two people.
Where was Shohei's fiance at, is what I want to know. Like, he was engaged / married. Where the hell was she at?
I know Shohei's smarter than this.
That's the part that doesn't add up to me. Like, they're treating him like a kid. Just because he can't speak English fluently does not make him a kid.
Right.
Like, how old is Shohei Ohtani? He's like 26.
27 or 28.
Yeah, okay. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, that's the part that's crazy to me. It's like, we're just supposed to be like, well, he can't speak English. That means he's not an adult. He doesn't know how bank accounts work. Like, what the hell are we talking about?
He doesn't know where his money's going.
Does the bank, so you're telling me the bank can't bring in somebody to, make sure this is all good whenever he's coming? And it's like, hey, the most famous person in L.A., or at least a sports figure besides LeBron James, is billion-dollar athlete that maybe, we're going to have do business with. We're not going to, make sure he's not getting taken advantage of. That seems weird to me, too.
They were saying that he was impersonating Shohei to, get this money out of his account.
Like just going to the actual bank and, showing up as him? And they're like, hey, all Asians look the same? Or
Or calling the bank and, saying, I'm Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's the thing, calling them, but it's like, what? Shohei, I thought you couldn't speak English. How are you talking now?
Right. I don't know. It just still seems so... It seems like there's a lot of question marks.
19,000 bets.
19,000 bets.
And that Keyshawn Boutte is like, I'm off the hook now, man. This guy, this is a different level.
Can you move millions of dollars around just by on the phone? Can you do that?
I don't think so.
I mean, I've never moved millions of dollars around. I don't know. In the movies, I got to go by the bank for this. Whenever there's a hostage, they're like, no, we can't do this over the phone. It'll raise red flags. We got to go to the actual bank. I mean, I don't know if that's just a movie trope or whatever, but...
It sounded like he got really in deep with this bookmaker, too, where he just really wasn't, paying any of his bets back. And I saw some excerpt from one of the texts where this bookie was texting this guy saying, we have eyes on Shohei, walking his dog right now. Shohei was about to get, whacked by the mob or something like that.
Yeah. And I mean, I know people are like, hey... How would this guy have credit to bet this much? But if they know he's actually Shohei's interpreter and that Shohei's eventually going to fall for it or fall victim to it or it's going to come back on him, maybe they knew hey, we can – at the very least, we'll strong-arm Shohei and threaten to break his arm. O.J. Simpson was almost the Terminator. He was a finalist for the Terminator. It was either him or Arnold. And James Cameron said, we're going to go with Arnold. That's how close it was. And the Forrest Gump 2 script got turned in on September 10th, 2001. Bad timing.
I didn't know about Forrest Gump 2.
Yeah, the script, the guy who was doing the movie said we turned in the script on September 10th. And then after September 11th happened, it just got shelved and never revisited. They were apparently going to have Forrest Gump riding in the back of the Bronco, according to these stories.
Did you ever see some of his posts on Twitter when he was doing some recurring posts?
OJ?
Yeah.
Well, he was lying up right up until like last month. He came out with a video and they were like, he was like, hospice? Who reported hospice? He's like, I'm feeling great right now. Like,
yeah, that actually was kind of sad. Yeah. Where he's like denying that he's dying and just trying to.
I didn't see some of that.
I had no idea that he had cancer.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I quit watching like a year or two ago when he was still doing it, and it would be just be saying stuff. I was like, man, what are you? Just go
hello,
away.
Twitter world.
Yeah.
He loved giving his fantasy football stuff.
Yes.
And he'd always end with, I'm just saying.
The video of him drafting Andrew Luck like an hour after he retired is amazing.
Yeah. And then you felt a little icky. It's like, I don't think we should be like watching and helping this guy become a celebrity right. again. Like, he's not your lovable uncle. The Vince Staples show on Netflix had a character, an uncle, in L.A. Like, they're at a cookout, and, like, he's wearing USC gear, and, like, you're like, is this supposed to be O.J.? And then, like, he goes and gets in a Bronco, and you're like, yep, it is supposed to be O.J. It's like, he's talking about, like, the being famous in the past and, like, being so good in the past and all this, and when people turn on you about family and stuff, and he just goes and gets in his Broncos. He's not named O.J. I think it might either be, like, AJ or something like that, but like, yeah, then he goes and gets in his Bronco. All right, let's catch a break. Good batch of headlines, Sam. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been the coach who realized that?
Okay, let's laugh at Kentucky now. It's been an hour and 20 minutes. Kentucky has hired, or at least closing in on hiring, I guess it still hasn't gotten to the absolute finish line, on a basketball coach. It was not Jay Wright. It was not Danny Hurley. It was not Nate Oates. It was not Scott Drew. It was not Danny Hurley again at 8 years, $100 million, which was the reported offer that they gave him. He still said nope, which, you know, that's what I said I would do if I was Kentucky, and they said no. So, okay. I don't think I would have done the next thing, which was then turn to the person they turned to. I think I might have called
Drew Scott,
try his brother or his doppelganger, or maybe at least call, like, Bruce Pearl. I would have gotten down my list a little bit more and gotten told no a couple more times before I ended up with Mark Pope, the coach at BYU. But that's reportedly what their athletic director, Mitch Barnhart, has done. He has honed in on Mark Pope of BYU, who I'm on the record of, like, hating watching his team play basketball this year. Mark Pope that has yet to win anything of consequence while coaching college basketball, has not advanced in the NCAA tournament yet, has not won a conference regular season title or a conference tournament title, who has finished fifth place or worse in his conference five times. That Mark Pope. But he did play on their 1996 national championship basketball team.
Yeah, you know, after Scott Drew respectfully declined after praying on it yesterday, saying no thanks to Mitch Barnhart, the word up there was going to be that they were going to make their home run swing for Danny Hurley, which I get. Like John said, I think you know make him tell you to go away, and I guess he finally did tell him to go away. But then the notion was they might take a little bit of time. You know, let's see what happens with Billy Donovan in the NBA play-in tournament. Leave him alone till they could talk to him maybe next week. Maybe vet some other names. You know, we all heard the names that emerged. Sean Miller, Bruce Pearl, Chris Beard, Brad Underwood got into the mix, which I think would have been an interesting hire for them. But apparently Mitch Barnhart was not willing to wait to engage with Donovan. And he frankly didn't talk to any of those other names I just mentioned, Miller, Beard, Pearl.
The initial take was that the initial report was that he didn't even talk to Billy Donovan seriously. But then that got some pushback from one of the Athletic writers who covers Kentucky. He came out and said they did talk to Billy Donovan, but Billy Donovan wasn't interested really in coming back to college at the moment. He was focused on finishing the bowl season. Doesn't mean he wouldn't have been interested 2 weeks from now, but was like, hey, I got a job at hand. I can't talk right now. And Kentucky said, okay, well, see you later.
Well, I think we might know the answer. I was going to say, how would you grade this hire for a blue blood? But when we opened the segment by saying, let's laugh at Kentucky for a little bit, I think you probably kind of know how people are grading this. And I got to say, last night for Big Blue Nation, I feel like I've been there before, right? I felt some vibes from previous Tennessee football searches where you have ambition and this is what you end up getting. It's tough.
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that, yeah, you've been in that position. Almost every fan base has been in that position where you're looking and saying, hey, here's our dream candidate. Here's who we're going to make say no. But at the very least, here's the floor. And then you get way past the floor and end up with somebody that, you know, is way worse than you thought possible. The guy that you thought, no way, that's a real candidate, becomes your head coach. Like, yes, from that perspective, sure. But I don't think Tennessee has ever been in position to be in a coaching search and be as healthy as Kentucky basketball should be and have this happen to them. Because, like, when Tennessee has struck out, Tennessee's been in turmoil. Like, Tennessee has Tennessee had to have a coaching search with a coach that, like, wasn't fired? I mean, like, the only one would be Pat, right? And that was just like, hey, we're going to promote the assistant. Like, we've never done a full coaching search for somebody that's just, like, left. You know, in, like, modern history. There might be some time, you know, way back in the day. But, like,
Konzo?
Okay.
Yeah. But you're right, other than that.
No, I mean, Konzo's a good one. Konzo's a good one. Football, you know, was really what I was pointing to because Kentucky basketball and football is kind of, like, where you're drawing the comparison because Tennessee basketball is not a blue blood or even close to it, right? Like, Konzo had the one tournament in 3 years. That would – you could call that coming off of success, but like it wasn't like Tennessee was ready to be a major player. Kentucky basketball and Tennessee football are somewhat comparable, especially their stance in the last, you know, 40 years of the sport. Tennessee football, and they've had to go out big-name hunting. They've been coming, you know, off of firing Philip Fulmer, Kiffin leaving, but Kiffin leaving was such – late in the game that it wasn't like you could really go out and hire anybody. I was like, hey, we're going to maybe call Air Force's coach, or we're going to let like Kippy Brown do it for a year, or we're going to go hire Louisiana Tech's coach. Like, it wasn't like you could go out and get a big person after you were in that position. And then, of course, we know what happened with Dooley and Butch and Pruitt. So, like, Tennessee was never really what you would consider in a healthy spot. Kentucky basketball was pretty good this year. You know, now by their standards, there was definitely some frustrating times, but like, let's not rewrite history and pretend like Kentucky wasn't a very popular pick to go to the Final Four, to do something special in a tournament. A lot of the basketball experts were calling them the best team in the SEC, the hottest team in the country, the most dangerous team in the country. So like, the one game sample size in the tournament did not do well for them, but they should be pretty healthy otherwise. They haven't been like tainted from a perception standpoint. Then Coach Cal leaves and we call it a get out of jail free card. Like, they were actually thinking, hey, we have millions and millions of dollars. We have a team that's, you know, a program that has been pretty good the last couple years. We're a blue blood. We should be able to go out and hire whoever we want.
I agree with that. I think what really puzzles me, to kind of continue that thought, is so they missed on their home run swings, you know, Jay Wright, Danny Hurley. Did you hear Frank Vogel's name was in the mix too?
I didn't. I saw him like on a gambling odd thing, but like that to me.
Yeah.
I mean, like, unless Frank Vogel is going to get fired because the Suns are so bad this year, but like I think that was weird. I saw him on a gambling list, but that's the only place I saw it mentioned.
And I wouldn't group him into the home run swings either, but it just gave me a second to think about that. But so. Yeah, so Jay Wright, no. Hurley, no. I'd even consider Scott Drew in that level, and he said no. What I'm really puzzled by is that I can understand maybe that, okay, the Billy Donovan thing, they didn't want to wait because that could be at least a week, maybe longer, depending upon how the Bulls do. But there were some other good names out there, better than Mark Pope, I would think, that would have listened. I still think Bruce Pearl would have listened. I am certain Brad Underwood would have listened. Chris Beard, who knows, he just had passed on the Arkansas job as far as being a candidate. Those are big names, you know. Sean Miller, not so much these days, but I that's the part that puzzles me. It's like I would have understood that if they had, Barnhart had talked to those guys and they were like, nah, we're not interested.
Like all of those coaches have won something.
Right.
Now, they didn't go to Kentucky and play on the national championship team and wasn't a team captain, you know, on that 96 team. And I think, obviously, this guy's getting a big boost because of that. Like, we're seeing what, you know, the Lady Vols have kind of dealt with when you're trying to get back to your roots and keep it in the family or get it back in the family in Kentucky's situation. But that doesn't usually work.
No.
The tiebreaker for being one of your own doesn't really work. Does it make it better when you win? Yeah. Does it make it hurt worse when you lose? Yeah. Does it make it more awkward when the fans are now mad and like they're trying to decide, are we going to burn this down and be mad, or are we going to have to support one of our own because, hey, you know, you don't remember this, guys. He won a national championship with us. He's one of us. He loves us. I don't know. But, yeah, Bob, like you said, there were probably 20 names that I would have looked at before getting to Mark Pope. Now, you know, BYU did play a modern offensive system, and by that I mean they shot a lot of threes. You know, so if like he's going to try to bring that mentality there, like, okay, but like that almost lowers the ceiling of the program in terms of if you're just going to try to do the that style of basketball, unless you're getting the elite point guards that can break down the team that can run that offense. I don't know, but like that's what people are trying to sell it on. It's like, hey, he's modern. He's a good coach. He's got a good offensive system. If you say so, I think the offensive system was pretty sloppy this year whenever I watched him. Looked pretty sloppy in the postseason when Duquesne whipped their ass.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of Kentucky fans that I'm friends with that they were talking about, can we Schiano this hire here?
Well, that's what I'm talking about with the fine line, because you can't really burn it down because he's one of your own.
Right.
Like it's like, you know, taking somebody off of the 98 championship team and T. Martin. I mean, exactly. It's a little bit different because, you know, Pope wasn't the best player on that team, but neither was T. Martin. And, like, you know, team captain. I mean, he only played 20 minutes a game that year, but he was the captain. So, like, he's beloved. He's on that team. Would fans rally against T. Martin if he was named coach of Tennessee football? Probably not. There'd be a big portion disappointed, but, like, you'd have to have some type of respect for him to, like, not actually go through and, like, embarrass him and, like, you know.
It would be like Duke, like, overturning the Shire hire after Coach K.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, maybe that's a better comparison.
Yeah.
If they're just like, no, we don't want Shire. No, no way. Now, a little bit different because Coach K, that was his successor.
Yeah.
And, like, Coach K is kind of heir apparent that he kind of groomed and wanted. But, yeah, like, it's tricky for them because I'm sure there are some Kentucky fans like, you know what, he's one of us, let's give it a chance. But everyone else knows, like, man, this is underwhelming. This is bad. You know, Matt Jones from Kentucky Sports Radio just kept saying, this is Barnhart going rogue. No one else knew this was happening. No one else wanted this to happen. This is just Barnhart's guy. Which is a little surprising to me because what does going rogue mean? I thought the athletic director was the guy who was supposed to hire the coach.
Yeah, I don't know. It's his call to make, right?
Right. I mean, that's what the AD was in charge of doing.
Yeah. That's a classic example that, again, where you feel your boosters and your fan base have more of a say in that process than they really do, and they don't like it because of the outcome.
It's embarrassing for Kentucky one way or the other. Like, there's so many of their fans are going to be upset. Now, maybe it's something that you get a couple months removed from, and by the time the season rolls around, they'll be excited, I guess. And, like, in their KSR spaces, I know that the thing they're trying to hang on to for hope is that, hey, Pope and Reed Shepherd's dad were roommates in college, and Reed Shepherd's going to stay, and help this guy, and he's going to come back to school. To which, like, yeah, Reed Shepard's good. He's really good. And Kentucky fans love him. If he comes back, that doesn't mean that the hire's all of a sudden good. It's not like he's that level of prospect. But also, like, if you're him, man, like, you're not going to be a top five pick ever again. Like, you're a top five pick this year because the draft sucks. Like, you're not a top five pick in most years. So you're really going to turn down that much money? Because that's not NIL can make up the difference. That's not what that is.
Yeah.
The difference between being a top five pick and, like, the number, like, 15 pick is like, $20 million over the course of the contract. It's something crazy like that. Like, you're going to turn down that just because your dad was roommates with this guy 20 years ago?
And then you just got to go into a new system, too. Like, you don't know that you're going to get that production again.
Right. Now, you know,
50% from three this year.
You know, and maybe he looks and says, hey, BYU had a lot of white guys. I'm a white guy. I can play in this system. I don't know. Mark Pope knows how to coach white guys. Here I am. I don't know. And maybe he wants to maybe do, like, the transition and try to help a coach and help your program, because you would feel a little obligated if you're Reed Shepard. You know, to be like, hey, I love Kentucky, and I can really help this program be stable and get the system in and help this coach and help the fans rally. But, like, $20 million, $30 million, that's the difference between being a top five pick and not. I don't love him that much. I don't love Kentucky that much. I'll come back and, like, to come to games and, like, you can honor me or whatever. Hey, this is the team that beat Tennessee on senior day. That's all they accomplished. But, yeah, you know. I hope Mark Pope and my dad had a good time in college, but I'm going to the league. But ultimately, even if Reed Shepard comes back, it doesn't change anything.
Yeah, I think for sure. We had this conversation about Alabama football when they announced Kalen DeBoer. Do they take a step back in the first year? I think with Kentucky, it's actually Alabama's rallied a little in their recruiting and everything for football. I would say for Kentucky basketball, this feels to me like an absolute certainty that next season's a step back for them. And does it go beyond a season? Because recruiting will be key. Well, boy, one thing we know Cal could do was recruit. And a lot of these other guys who were named as potential candidates would have had a draw, too. We'll just see what Mark Pope can do recruiting-wise. I don't have enough of a sample to say that he's going to be able to make that adjustment and roll against people like Cal and Barnes and Nate Oates and all these. I mean, it's a loaded conference, man. It is loaded. We're stating the obvious, but that's the part I'd be concerned about, is can he truly draw the talent in, not just for next season, but beyond that?
If you're Kentucky basketball, you probably think it's your birthright to be good at something, but I would say Indiana basketball felt the same way.
Sure did.
I would say Louisville basketball felt the same way. Both those programs probably thought they were too big to fail. But guess what? So did the people who created the Titanic.
Whoa.
You know, not to make you think about those people freezing in the water and drowning, but, like, hey, it was supposed to be too big to fail. And, like, that can happen if you're Kentucky basketball. Like, you're not above one wrong move sinking you, pun intended, for the next 5 years. Like, you're not, like, it happens all the time. It's happening to their biggest rivals or their biggest comparisons. Like, UCLA basketball wandered through the desert too. Like, it can definitely happen. Tennessee football, we've seen what happened, you know, not to compare the two, but college sports are competitive now, man. Like, you know, you mentioned all those coaches in the SEC. Like, Mark Pope, where does he rank in terms of best coaches in the SEC? 10th?
I was just about to ask, like, how many schools are you taking? But, like, if you're committing to a school, like, where does Kentucky fall on that list now? Like,
even
five?
Even in the conference,
right.
Not even
nationally.
Yeah,
in the conference, that's what I'm saying. Like,
They talk about their NIL, but the NIL stuff doesn't get the best reviews. Like, Coach Cal left, and Coach Cal kind of burned it down the way I was like, hey, administrations win championships, and I wanted to go somewhere where we could win. Like, basically, like, hey, Kentucky's administration ain't it. And then he talked about NIL. He's like, hey, I don't have to put it together here. I kind of had to do that at Kentucky. So, like, they seem to kind of be struggling there as well. But, like, just running through the SEC real quick, you taking him over Bruce Pearl?
Nope.
You taking him over Rick Barnes?
Nope.
You taking him over Nate Oates?
Nope.
Buzz Williams?
No.
Chris Beard?
Nope.
Cal?
I
might even go to Florida before I go to this guy right now.
Oh, over Todd Golden? I mean Todd Golden over Pope? Yeah, of course.
I was going to have him, you know, a little bit below Golden, and you know, maybe on par with Lamont Paris. Like, I don't know. Like, Lamont's bet, you know, his year this year was really good. Like, but like, he can maybe be on that tier, but that tier is still going to be like 7th or 8th when you actually, like, because I mean, Chris Beard's better than him.
He's more in the, like, Dennis Gates, new Vandy coach Byington range to me, honestly.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and then you bring in the, you know, I don't know about Oklahoma and Texas coach. Maybe he's on par with those guys because I don't think either one of those are special. But like,
Porter Moser's a good coach at Oklahoma.
Yeah. Oklahoma hasn't had any success with him yet, that's right? That's fair. He had a great run at Loyola, but like,
yeah,
he can be that level. The point is, like, it's gone from upper tier where Coach Cal at least got the respect, you know, where we were talking about him as a top level coach, and he was still getting mentioned as top 5, top 10. Like, this guy's a long way from top 5, top 10 in the country. Hell, he's not top 5 in the SEC.
Yeah, it starts to enter the range of, well, he's not the worst coach in the SEC, you know, and that's really, I mean, that speaks to how strong the SEC's become, but still.
Rick Butler, Rocky Top Insider, a little orange and white game preview coming up after the break because the spring game is tomorrow, even if it doesn't really feel like it. Sam, send us to break.
Are you ready?
Cruising down the street in my 6-4. Blowing Kush smoke out the window.
Right.
Pockets full of hundreds, no singles. Pockets full of hundreds, no singles.
This segment's brought to you by Knoxville Smiles. Dr. Stephen Malone and his staff take pride in listening to and communicating with their patients to help them make the best decisions about their dental health. They can help you too. Contact Knoxville Smiles today at 865-539-1776. That's 539-1776 to set up an appointment. Take a virtual tour of their state-of-the-art West Knoxville facility at knoxvillesmiles.com. The orange and white game is tomorrow. Let's talk with RTI's Rick Butler about it. Rick, top of the morning to you.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thank you for having me on the program once again. Hopefully you guys are having a good Friday. I don't know about you guys, but I have Masters coverage on in the morning, so pretty good way to start the day.
No, we don't have Masters coverage on. We're working. We can't have the golf feed on right now. We're doing a radio show. I'm staring at my screens. I'm staring at Bob. I'm staring at Sam. But anything cool happened so far this morning in the Masters?
Not particularly. Tiger Woods is back in the course to finish out his round, and that's about the only thing I'm watching so far. So nothing too exciting that I've seen.
It's going to be a long day for Tiger. We'll see if he can hold up. He's got how many holes do you have to play today, Sam?
He started on 14.
Okay, so 23.
Mm-hmm.
Rick, what are the biggest storylines, if you can find plural, for the orange and white game tomorrow?
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple certainly going into it. One of them is going to be a constant no matter where you look, and that's just looking at some of the newcomers, seeing what they can bring to the table. There's been a couple of young guys who have gotten good praise through spring camp so far, and not necessarily in the way of, hey, they're going to be a starting player this year. They might even become a star player, just in the terms of, hey, man, these guys are really progressing along early for Tennessee. I look at Boo Carter as one of those guys from the 2024 recruiting class. A lot of people have said good things about what he can do, so I'm excited to go watch him fly around. Obviously, there's a lot of opportunities for Tennessee's running backs room. This is something I've talked about with the guys a lot throughout the week, but with Cam Seldon going down, you have opportunity. Now, with that opportunity, there comes a little bit of balance. You don't want to put Dylan Sampson in necessarily a bell cow role right now in spring, so then you elevate some of these younger running backs. We talked to Khalifa Keith yesterday, who seems like he's kind of ready for the moment when it comes to the spring game this Saturday. He wants to use his physicality to his advantage. So I'm certainly looking at the running backs with Cam Seldon going down. And then just, hey, how about these new defensive backs, right? Tennessee had a lot of transition in the turnover in the secondary. You had a lot of guys leave. You brought a lot of guys in. But there's also a couple of those rising sophomores, maybe a rising redshirt sophomore like a Jordan Matthews, like a Ricky Gibson, guys who you believe have been developing over the last year or so. What are they going to look like against some of these new Tennessee wide receivers? Dante Thornton back in his groove. Obviously, Chris Brazel coming in, Mike Matthews. So I do think that when you go out there on Saturday, no matter how short of a game it is, because obviously this thing isn't going to go too long, I do think there's a couple of spots to look at for some good storylines.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, Rick, was has there been any release on because it feels like sometimes it varies in terms of the format itself. I mean, they call it a game, but they do, you know, sometimes they enter into certain, I don't know what you would call it, like drills or exercises that don't necessarily reflect a game scenario per se, you know, like game time, et cetera. Have you heard anything about that from Heupel's staff?
Yeah, so we do know what the format's going to be, and the format is going to look like pretty much what it's looked like through the Josh Heupel era so far. And that does include less games and activities and sort of stuff for the fans, but that also includes a little bit of a quicker paced spring game. So basically it will be normal scoring that will apply with the offense. So the offense is going to be wearing white. They'll have normal scoring through the first half of or so. And then there's going to be a running clock for the second half. So things are certainly going to get sped up there. They might do a little bit more 2-minute drill in that time of the game. So I do think it's going to resemble more of a normal game as opposed to, you know, try to hit the crossbar challenges and stuff like that.
Spraggins, Cooper Mays, Carrick, most likely Lampley, not going to go tomorrow during the Orange and White game. Going to get a chance to see some young guys get out there and compete. I know the left guard spot is still a concern or open as far as Tennessee's offensive line goes for the fall. Rick, what is your confidence level in this offensive line being at least serviceable in the fall? Is that something Tennessee fans should be worrying about, or do you think there's enough bodies there to make it work? Is it going to get addressed in the transfer portal after spring practice is done? Scale of 1 to 100, how confident are you in this offensive line?
I would put my confidence heading into next year with the offensive line probably in the 80s off the top of my head. I think that you bring back a really solid starting group. And to me, one of the biggest names that you think about when you talk about the offensive line is Lance Hurd, right? Without Lance Hurd, I think that you're definitely looking at a couple more question marks on the offensive line. You're having more conversations of, hey, who can step up into that role and then excel into it? I think when you bring Lance Hurd in, you're now talking about a guy of, hey, this is the guy who can play this position. Now we just got to get him comfortable in the system. Now we just got to get him comfortable with the tempo, with the offense, with the cadence, whatever else it might be. So I really think that Lance Hurd coming into Tennessee, just being a sophomore after 1 year at LSU, I think that he gives me a lot of confidence for this offensive line to be able to mix and match with the other parts that Tennessee has. You just mentioned it. Guys who have maybe been a little banged up this spring, but Javonte Spraggins, Cooper Mays, you have John Campbell Jr. on the other side, and you're kind of looking at that left guard position. So I do have good confidence. Now, I don't necessarily have a ton of overwhelming confidence in the depth behind them, though I do acknowledge that they have bodies who have been productive and look like they've been progressing well during training camp. But as far as the starting line goes, man, I think you're bringing back some dogs right there in the trenches, and especially with Lance Hurd, I think that shores things up a good bit.
Rick, you know, you talked a little bit about the running back spot there, and I know you've got some turnover with this coaching staff with getting a new running back and linebacker coach. I think, you know, talking about the linebackers here with new coach William Inge, he's had some really interesting stuff to say at his press conferences. Can you just kind of talk about what you've seen out of that linebacker group so far through spring practice? Obviously, you get Keenan Pille back, a guy that we were really excited about but never really saw much action in. And then you've got a couple of young guys that have, you know, are really looking to kind of step up into a bigger role this year.
Yeah, that's a great question. I've really enjoyed my time spent around the linebackers this year, just because William Inge seems like a really interesting guy. He's not necessarily going to be the guy that strikes out to you on the practice field because he's the loudest and the most intense. That might be new Tennessee running backs coach Darrell Sims that has that title now. But William Inge, honestly, just, he feels like one of those college professors that you have, and you're kind of looking around like, hey, is this really what college class is supposed to look like? Because he's in the meeting rooms kind of giving these wacky examples of, you know, you got to be calm on the waves, and when the waves are rough, the captain owns the sea. He sort of almost talks in this WWE promo type of way, but I think it's something that the linebackers have really sort of latched onto. I think it's something that they really connect with. And one of the other things that William Inge has brought to Tennessee is a big player-led development mentality. If you go into the linebacker room, yeah, of course, a lot of the times you'll see William Inge coaching each other, but there's a good bit of time that you'll walk into that room and you'll see other linebackers instructing other linebackers. He really believes in this idea of if you can preach it, you can play it, and if you can play it, you can preach it. So he wants all his guys to be on the same page. Keenan Peely has been a full participant so far from what we've seen at practice. That's really beneficial news for Tennessee. But the one guy that's really struck me from the linebacker room that I think is going to make a tremendous second-year jump is Jeremiah Tielander. He was a guy who kind of came on it late in the year last year. He got an increased role, but it sounds like he has just been at work 24/7 so far this offseason. He's a guy that I really think could make a big jump, not only in his athleticism on the field, but just IQ and understanding and awareness of what's going on. So I like what I've seen from the linebacker room, but I really think that Jeremiah Tielander is maybe one of those guys that stood out to me during spring camp.
Are you rooting for the offense or the defense tomorrow?
I think you always want to maybe root for the defense if you're watching Tennessee football, because you believe that the offense can, you know, is maybe just one of those teams that's a play away from getting things back going. So I think with all the new turnover on defense, I expect the offense to maybe get their number a couple more times, but I want to see what that defense can bring. If the defense can go out there and make some big stops, I'm feeling better heading into the end to the summer than I am if, you know, Nico Iamaleava is just out there slinging it. I think we can expect that regardless in the season, but I want to see the defense step up and make some good plays this spring.
Typically, I would agree, but you did mention Nico, and I want to see Nico just come out there and his reps just dominate and just look like the future Heisman Trophy winner, to look like the Tennessee Tribal Chief. Going to be 71 degrees on Saturday. Going to be a perfect football day. Rick, on the way out, any thoughts on WrestleMania?
Yeah, I really liked it. I was just about to say, where are you going to be there holding up the one in the sky during his first touchdown pass? I'd imagine that a couple people around the stadium will be, but I really enjoyed it. I had fun with it. Unfortunately, I missed Saturday because I was in Georgia for a wedding that I had to go to, so unfortunately missed the first day, caught up on it. I did double duty on Sunday, actually, but I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with it. I think maybe my most fun match that I had to watch. I really enjoyed the match between Logan Paul, Kevin Owens, and Randy Orton. So it was a good time all around, but you get the big crowning moment at the end. What more can you ask for? Storybook ending.
It was a little too much at the end, though, right? The 15 minutes in the ring with all the crying and everything, it was a little too much.
Yeah, but, you know, I obviously never watched it myself, but from what I heard in podcasts after the match was every single time Dusty Rhodes won a belt, like the whole locker room would go out there to put him on their shoulders and jump around with him. So at the very least, I think maybe there was a little bit of historical tie to some of Dusty's reigns with all the over-the-top celebration.
Okay, back to unscripted sports. and answer carefully. So this weekend, there is a lot going on, obviously, orange and white game. You got the baseball series. We've got pretty significant visits from transfer portal basketball dudes. Have you guys, you, Shumpert, Foster, you guys talked about your divide and conquer plan here, because there is a lot happening?
Well, Bob, we've certainly talked about our energy drink methods for the weekend. I think we're going to be living on Celsius and Monster for the next couple days. If you guys have any recommendations for us, please throw them that way. But no, it's going to be a big weekend. I mean, nonstop starting tonight with baseball, and it's LSU, right? So it's not even just like a rinky-dink team is coming in. I know LSU not ranked right now, kind of on the outside looking in, but man, it's still a big-time baseball team, still a team that Tennessee has had a nice little mini rivalry with over the last 3 years or so. So it's going to be a huge weekend on campus. And then plus, I mean, even I don't know if you guys have seen this, but the schedule for who's throwing out the first pitch of the baseball game, star-studded affair. You have Kim Caldwell on Friday. That's going to be tonight. You have Hall of Famer Todd Helton throwing out the first pitch on Saturday. And you have the reigning SEC Player of the Year, Dalton Kinect, throwing out the pitch on Sunday. So a lot of stars in Knoxville this weekend, a lot of events happening in Knoxville this weekend, but it's going to be a pretty good time all around, just a little busy.
Just know I'm going to be inside Lindsey Nelson Stadium a little early on Friday as I can see old Kim.
I don't think you'll be alone.
Rick Butler, RockyTopInsider.com. Rick, R-I-C underscore Butler on X. Give him a follow. Appreciate the time. Look forward to the coverage coming out of the weekend.
Hey, thank you, guys. Always good to talk to you. Enjoy that new studio. Wow, is it a masterpiece. You guys deserve it. So have a great rest of the show, and we'll talk to you later.
Hour two in the books. Hour three coming at you.
The first annual Fan Run Open.